This is Project Independence and You, and we've been talking with Dr. Preeti Chandra. I am Rebecca Miller, along with my co-host, David Linden.
Good afternoon.
Hello, David. Okay, we're returning back with Dr. Chandra, and one of the things that she wanted to talk a little bit about is salt. How much salt is good? How much salt is bad? How do we know? What are your recommendations?
So I wanted to touch upon salt because people have this fear of salt, and some of them use too much salt. They don't know what to eat. They buy food from the supermarket. Or there is another group of people who are so scared of salt that they make their food taste bad. So there is a recommendation for this. And an easy guideline is 1 teaspoonful, a little over 1 teaspoonful. 1 teaspoonful is about 2,000 milligrams or 2 grams, and about 2.25 grams is the daily allowance. And that is a little bit stringent if you have congestive heart failure. But overall, if I have to say, keep your overall daily intake limited to 1 teaspoonful of salt a day. That includes all that you use in your cooking, all that you eat from outside. I would tell the listeners that if you're buying food off the supermarket, if you're buying canned food, be very vigilant. Look at the labels. Make sure that per serving, there should be no more than 350 milligrams of salt. If there is more than 350 milligrams of salt per serving, that is a very salt-rich food, and that's going to probably increase your blood pressure.
When you say per serving, you're saying just a per meal, or if you're opening a can of soup, for per soup, when you're talking about a
usually a can of soup, we say so many things per serving. How many servings in the can? Two.
Right.
But most people eat the whole can, and so they're getting double the amount of salt and everything else.
Absolutely. So I think it's the easiest way to say how many servings is just look at the label, and it'll tell you how many grams per serving. So if the concentration is more than 350 milligrams per serving, then it is a high salt content food. But if you're, of course, eating more than a serving, then obviously that number increases proportionately for each one of us.
Okay.
So that will be a rough guideline to follow.
Thank you so much for that. And this is perfect because it's leading into one of the things we were going to be talking about, which is what between with men and women, there's serving size differences. There's, you know, how our heart rates may be. I don't know if they go faster when we exercise. What do you find are the differences or the things that women may need to be aware of versus what men need to be aware of?
Great question. This is particularly important in this day and age, and awareness about women's heart disease is increasing. And just to give you an idea, 1 in 3 women will die of heart disease, and heart disease kills 1 woman every minute. So you can imagine what is the magnanimity of this problem.
Wow.
So for ages, we've been very, very dismissive about heart disease in women, and that has led to a lot of ignorance and a lot of missed diagnoses and late diagnoses. And we are bearing the sequelae of that. So what I would tell all the women listeners is that put yourself first. Make sure you don't ignore any symptoms, any signs that your body gives you. We are, as women, as long as we are premenopausal, have a lower risk of heart disease than men have because of estrogen, which is a female hormone which protects us, gives us a little bit of more protection than men have. However, once we reach menopause, that protection wears off and our risk equals that of men. And traditionally, women have always put their children first, their family first, and we've not watched what we eat, ignored our weight, childbearing, and all those things also leads to weight increase. And as a result, our risk factors increase. So I'm going to tell each one of you to just be on top of your cardiac health. Whatever applies to a man to protect him from heart disease applies to a woman too. Exercise is essential for a woman too. Do the 30 minutes every week, 5 days a week. Make sure you eat lean meats, fish, vegetables. Stay away from red meats. Stay away from saturated fat. Stay away from too much salt. And don't ignore symptoms. The main take-home point here is don't be dismissive that the chest pain that you've been having for a month when you walk up the stairs is indigestion. Go speak to your physician about it. Don't say, that can't happen to me. And make sure that you recognize symptoms early on so that they can be addressed in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I've read that the symptoms of a coronary event are different for men and women.
You're certainly right, David, that in women, symptoms can be much more subtle. You can have a little bit of pain just under your sternal bone. You could feel a little bit of indigestion, jaw pain, left arm pain, left-sided chest pain, right-sided chest pain. The symptoms are very varied and very heterogeneous. And there is no way to say that only if you're shoveling snow and if you're having chest pain right in the center of your chest and you're sweating, that's the only definition of a heart attack. The definition of a heart attack can be very, very different. And any pain in the chest, jaw, especially that something that comes on consistently with exertion, relieved with rest, or even if it happens at rest, but it's happening to a level of discomfort that is not usual, not routine for you, please bring it to the attention of your physician so that the necessary testing can be done. Maybe a stress test is needed. Maybe an angiogram is needed.
So don't dismiss. Don't dismiss any symptoms.
Don't ignore.
Especially if it's after shoveling or, after a strenuous event, don't dismiss it. Get yourself to a doctor. Call 911 if you have to. I think this is all excellent advice and excellent information that you've provided us. One of the things, if I could get a little personal, is just wanted to ask you, what made you choose cardiology and how has this path rewarded you?
Thank you for giving the opportunity to talk about my personal career choice. So I always wanted to be a physician and initially started my residency in Brooklyn. And as a resident, I found that heart disease was one of the biggest killers. And I thought it was highly preventable. And I also thought that the treatment modalities were very simple in the sense if there's a blockage, we open the blockage. It's an easy solution. If there is an electrical problem with the heart, you put new wires in. That is a pacemaker. So every treatment modality for the heart seemed to be very logical, following physical principles. And number two, I was just intrigued about the heart. This is the organ that starts beating before we are born, starts beating on the 21st day after conception. And the stopping of the heart is what defines the end of life or death. So I just thought that there was no organ that was more intriguing, simpler, and meaningful than the heart, and that's why I made that a career choice. And it has been extremely rewarding. I have had countless patients who have been saved from heart ailments, including heart attacks, preventing heart attacks, just helping them empower themselves, giving them the right medications. Prevention is a huge part of my work, and so is lowering risk. And of course, treating the problem once it's happened and then preventing the problem from progressing further. And I think the biggest the proof of the pudding lies in the eating. I think the biggest proof is that the patients come back and say that how their lives have changed and how they feel more confident about their health, better. They're getting out. For example, I have someone who's a patient of mine who's 106. Though I don't take credit for his longevity, but I think that he feels very comfortable going forward and has hope that he's going to reach a few more years ahead of him. So that is extremely gratifying as a physician.
Right. So I guess that just really shows you, too, how individual we all are, like getting up to 106. And
yes.
That's wonderful. I know that David and I were talking a little before about how it's hard to kind of approach your doctor about issues or questions and
yes.
how the doctor approaches you. So
yes, we've had health chats and we advise people to talk to your doctor, ask questions. What's your cholesterol level? What's your lipid level? What's your blood pressure? All that. And many people are hesitant about asking questions of doctors, And the question is also, how receptive are many doctors to being asked questions? How do you overcome that? How do you feel about a doctor approaching a patient and saying, okay, let's review your numbers first. Bing, 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 bing. Now let's talk about why you're here today.
Great. I think that this varies from physician to physician, but I'm increasingly finding that most of my colleagues and most of the doctors that are practicing today, they welcome questions from the patients, and they will sit down with you and talk to you and break down the technical scientific jargon into a language that a common man can understand. And one of the biggest challenges is to understand your own health. And I think the doctor can facilitate that, and nowadays people do. Most of my colleagues do. And the best way to approach it is to tell your physician that I want to understand my health. Tell me how I can help myself. Tell me what's wrong with my health. And to tell it in a way that makes sense to each one of us. And one of the interesting things that one of the most important things that I take home messages is that when you look at your cholesterol panel, there is on the right-hand side what is the normal range of those values. And on the left-hand side is where each one of us stands. So it can be easily seen whether or not you are in that range. And if you're outside that range, then what can you do to come inside that range? So that is something that the doctor can walk you through. Mm-hmm. I would say do not hesitate. Ask questions. And if you are not happy with the answers you get, ask the question to another physician. So you are entitled to answers. Each one of us is. And I would encourage each one of you to ask your physician whatever questions you have and tell them to explain in lay terms so that you understand your health better and you can help yourself better. And that's actually doing a favor to the physician as well. So it's in both your interests, the patient and the physician.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Is that a good answer for you?
Yes,
you
got... very good. Yes.
Okay. Well, we have about a minute left. I just would like to thank you so much, Dr. Chandra, of Advantage Care Physicians. And those are in what areas? What towns are your offices located in?
So Advantage Care Physicians is a huge entity. We are in Manhattan. We are in Brooklyn. We are in Staten Island. We are in Nassau County. We are in Suffolk County. As far as Long Island is concerned, we have offices in Hempstead, in Valley Stream, Lake Success, Hicksville, Babylon, and Ronkonkoma.
North Hempstead, Lake Success. Here we go. Okay. Well, again, thank you so much. Perhaps you'll come back another time and we can talk a little bit more about cardiac health and cardiac care. David, thank you for your part. We're going to be taking a short break and we'll be returning with Tony Rovere, and he will be talking about his website.